goes into history and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marr.
An Irish archaeologist rang up a colleague and said, "I'm very excited. I've just found this very important ancient burial stone." "Where'd you find it?" said his friend. "Well, that's the amazing thing, you see. It was just by the side of the main Dublin road." "What's it like?" he said. "Well, it has the number 45 on it, so that's obviously the age at which the man died." "And does it have the man's name on it?" "Oh, yes, that's just under the 45. He was a man called Miles from Dublin." Excavators in Aberdeen unearthed a Scottish penny dated 1564. A few feet away, they found five skeletons all on their hands and knees.
And our brief oral test in history. Question one, what do you know about the Phoenicians?
They invented blinds.
How do we know Moses wore a wig?
Ah, because he was sometimes seen with and sometimes without hair on.
Where was the Magna Carta signed?
At the bottom.
Who said, "Kiss me, Hardy"?
Stand long. A guide was showing around a party of tourists. "This castle has stood for 600 years, and in that time, not a stone of it has been touched, nothing has been altered, nothing repaired, and nothing replaced." And the voice in the back said, "Must have the same landlord as I got."
The trouble with the study of history is that rather a lot of it comes from books. The facts of history are drawn from an enormous range of evidence, archaeological, geographical, documentary, but very few students get to see much of that. They just have to plough through history books. No wonder many attempted to echo Henry Ford's famous dictum.
History is punk.
Here are a few more definitions. Edward Gibbon.
Little more than the register of the crimes, follies, and misfortunes of mankind.
Our good friend Ambrose Bierce.
An account mostly false of events mostly unimportant, which are brought about by rulers mostly knaves and soldiers mostly fools.
It's a pity that there's so much cynicism surrounding the subject, because it may put off the potential student of history. If you could actually get to see the evidence at first hand and avoid the tedium of history books, he might become very enthusiastic. I mean, take cave paintings and things like that. There is detailed evidence of how men used to live thousands and thousands of years ago, and the historian can learn much from their study. He can also try to project himself into the mind of the man who executed the paintings.
I was never cut up for a caveman. I'm a throwback, or forward, or out. This tedious Stone Age just isn't my own age, I feel. You can't cast an age like a clout. Oh, it's fine for Tut, who is hairy and rough, killing reindeer and mammoths and all. But I'm tired of their cracks, and I bust this stone axe. So I'm painting rude words on the wall. How do you spell ug? I was never cut out for a caveman. My pigments and brushes are coarse, and I'm painting away for the future to say, my dear, it does really look quite like a horse. I must paint with agility, signs of fertility, the rude little men with no vests, and dare not lean back till the last pterodactyl has flown overhead to its nest. I was never cut out for a caveman. As an artist, I fight against odds. It's among my complaints that they will steal my paints and use them to daub horrid stripes on their bods. My charge is 3 flints for an indigo rinse. But once, when I said what he owed, a neighbor from Piltdown kept pulling my coat down and giving me 1 for the woe. I was never cut out for a caveman. No model will pose in my lair. The entrance is narrow, but boys from the barrow keep coming and dragging them off by the hair. My wife was all right when I turned in last night. This morning I found with a cry, ooh, her little fur brassier, poor for the glassier. Just remember her back. I was never cut out for a caveman. The menu just bores me to tears. Now the prospect before us is boiled brontosaurus for breakfast and dinner and supper for years. I must chalk up at once results of their hunts, or they'll drive me away from the den. This age Neolithic is wholly horrific. So roll on the ice age again.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. The trouble with modern history books is that modern historians feel an obligation to be accurate. And on the whole, history is more romantic and fun when imagination is allowed a bit of freedom. In the words of Anatole France,
history books which contain no lies are extremely dull.
And with some notable exceptions, historians are not always the greatest literary stylists. Oscar Wilde.
Anybody can make history. Only a great man can write it.
Well, take the Bible. They're a splendid history book, particularly the Old Testament. And it's a lot better written than many modern histories. Mind you, schoolboys haven't always absorbed all they should in its study, an examination answer.
The first book in the Bible is Guinness's.
But the Old Testament is a rich source of historical information.
Good evening. Here's the Guinness, the first verse of the New. It has come to pass that the seven elders of the seven tribes have now been abiding in Sodom for 7 days and seven nights. There seems little hope of an early settlement. An official spokesman said this afternoon, only a miracle can save us now. The walls of Jericho today suddenly collapsed, burying a certain Joshua and his seven-piece brass band, who were passing beneath them at the time. Scientists are working on the theory that sound waves from the music may have disturbed the brickwork. In the Sanhedrin today, there was a wailing and a gnashing of teeth in the public gallery when a certain Philistine was accused of writing on the wall at Belshazzar's feet a phrase including 2 four-letter words. At the weigh-in for the big fight tomorrow, the lion tipped the scales this evening at 15 stone 3 pounds and David at 14 stone 3 pounds. David's manager said this evening the odd stone could make all the difference.
That was David Hatch from the Cambridge Circus Review. It's called BBC BC. What really brings history to life, and it's not something that always comes across in history books, is a feeling that the events of the past were performed by real people. If one believes in historical figures, then one can try to understand their behavior as one would with contemporaries, Ian Forster.
The historian must have some conception of how men who are not historians behave. Otherwise, he will move in a world of the dead.
And Thomas Carlyle.
History is the essence of innumerable biographies.
Let's capture some of that essence with a few extracts from the biographies in schoolboy essays.
Robert the Bruce was a brave general and fought like a spider.
On the author of Utopia.
Sir Thomas More is a famous man who has been carbonized by the Roman Catholics.
And on Sir Walter Raleigh's gallantry with his cloak.
Her Majesty remarked to Sir Walter, I'm afraid I've spoiled your cloak. To which the gallant knight replied, Dieu et mon droit, which means my God and your right.
Let's go back even further and hear one about Cleopatra.
Caesar was soon given news of the approach of Cleopatra's burnished poop as it was very conspicuous in the distance.
One can also learn a good deal of biographical detail without historical figures by finding out what other people said about them during their lives, or perhaps even more revealingly, after their death. Here's an anonymous epitaph on Frederick, Prince of Wales, the father of George III.
Here lies Prince Fred, gone down among the dead. Had it been his father, we had much rather. Had it been his mother, better than any other. Had it been his sister, few would have missed her. Had it been the whole generation, 10 times better for the nation. But since 'tis only Fred, well, there's no more to be said.
you see, royalty was no protection against such barbs. And nor was being alive. Here's the epitaph which the Earl of Rochester presented to Charles II.
Here lies our mutton-eating king, whose word no man relies on, who never said a foolish thing, nor ever did a wise one.
And here's an anonymous epigram on Queen Caroline.
Most gracious queen, we thee implore to go away and sin no more. But did that effort be too great to go away at any rate?
Such snippets afford tantalizing glimpses into a previous age because they are eyewitness accounts. But how historians must long to be able to have the eyewitnesses actually present so they could cross-question them about the past. Fortunately, there is one man who has lived through everything and is more than ready to give interviews. He's the 2,000-year-old man.
Did you know King Arthur? Did you know?
Oh, yes.
Arthur, King the Knights of the Round Table.
Very important man. He wasn't only a king.
What do you mean he had?
He owned 4 apartment buildings. He was some man.
He did. And, and the Knights of the Round Table existed?
No Round Table.
There was no Round Table?
Only when he ate with his family was a Round Table.
Yes.
And when guests came, knights came. They would open it up and put in the leaves. No, but King Arthur of the Oval Table.
Oh, I see. I see. And is it true in those days that the knights were so gallant they would really fight for ladies?
Yes.
A handkerchief?
Oh, a handkerchief was one of the big fights.
Really?
You happen to stumble on one of the terrible fights of when a lady would lose a handkerchief, two knights would go at each other on horses. Long spears, you know, and run at each other and go to kill each other to get that handkerchief.
Why was that?
Because there was no Kleenex.
Carl Reiner in interviewing Mel Brooks. For the past few centuries, the work of the historian has been made simpler by the existence of newspapers, which give a daily record of current events. Anyone studying the last war, for example, would have a wealth of readily available newsprint to wade through. And he could find out any number of surprising facts, like this headline from the Sunday Dispatch.
Little enemy resistance to British withdrawal.
But there are other chronicles of history as it happens. Chroniclers and diaries are enormously valuable to historians. Reading their accounts is almost as good as interviewing eyewitnesses in the flesh. Let us now hear Samuel Pepys' version of the Civil War.
February the 6th. Got up. Had toast for breakfast. Broke quill. Continued with ballpoint. Put on clean socks. Royalists in another battle with roundheads. King Charles took refuge in Oak Tree while awaiting news of the latest casualty figures.
Lord Stuart, what news is there from the battlefront?
It is not good, sire. I have just received the figures. Listen. Lord Fairfax.
Roundhead.
3,675 dead. Prince Rupert.
Royalists.
5,997 dead. Earl Carstairs of Barnstable.
Moderately roundhead with protruding ears.
I therefore declare that the roundheads have taken Marston Moor.
Thus Charles learned of his impending defeat. Windy out, but brightened up early in the afternoon. Had bath. The king called in his councillors to discuss the situation.
Lord Robert of Mackenzie, what say you of how the war is going?
We're very glad you asked now, Your Majesty, because if we look at the battleground, we see that Cromwell already has all the pocket boroughs in his pocket, most of the safe constituencies in his safe, and a good many solid seats around his dining room table. Now, if this trend was reflected right across the country, we should soon see Cromwell in a very strong surge, with rather long sleeves nicely trimmed in Herman and Lane. Well, after that, what else can we expect? Well, I've been looking all morning at my projections. I'd say we'll be faced with probably a rump parliament or possibly a sirloin parliament, and then if things get really tough, a scraggy and then chewy crystal parliament.
If find that hard to swallow, Lord Robert. So what of my fate, sir?
Well, I'd say execution in some form, Your Majesty. Possibly even a hanging. Now, hanging would be quite an interesting development. And to illustrate it, I've developed a completely new swingometer here, which I think demonstrates the idea.
Silence, you fool! I think the vital result is coming in. Yes, the one result that my very life depends upon is coming in now on our household cavalry gallop poll.
Sire! Monstro, one! Queen of the South, two!
And so the king's fate was sealed. The government of England was seized by Cromwell's men, the monarch beheaded, and the country plunged into disorder. Put cat out and went to bed.
Chris Emmett, Nigel Rees, and Timothy Davis from the half-open university. At its best, studying history is a noble calling. Friedrich von Schlegel.
A historian is a prophet in reverse.
Needless to say, our good friend Ambrose Bierce produced a definition of the breed.
Historian, the broad-gauge gossip.
Ian MacLeod didn't trust them either.
History is too serious to be left with historians.
Still, it's a profession that has a strong attraction for a certain type of person. The strangest people like to pontificate on the past.
There's been some wonderful dominators in history, you know. Attila was one. He was a wonderful dominator. Attila the Nun. He was an amazing dominator. He had a Gothic horde, you know. A wonderful Gothic horde, and he used to move about entire countries and strangle people completely to death, you know. And then when everybody woke up, they'd see a little note pinned to their chest saying, "You've been dominated." Ha ha. Attila the Nun.
Peter Cook, as E.L. Risby. As I mentioned earlier, modern historians are very concerned with veracity. Increasingly, they would like to make history an exact science, which really takes away half the fun. It's conjecture that makes history enjoyable, trying to imagine what it really was like living in another time. Then let's hear another schoolboy howler. Question: why can true British history be said to begin with the reign of Henry the VII?
Answer: because up to this time it was all lies.
There's something in that, although, as Bernard Berenson said,
history is an art which must not neglect the known facts.
Herodotus had the right idea in the 5th century BC.
Very few things happen at the right time, and the rest did not happen at all. The conscientious historian will correct these defects.
And a similar thought from Dr. Johnson.
If a man could say nothing against the character but what he could prove, history could not be written.
Yes, in the business of picturing figures from the past, one must rely on imagination. I mean, think of Shakespeare and the enormous amount of conjecture there has been about him compared to the rather meagre known facts. Needless to say, though, there is one authority who actually met him.
Sir, would you discuss with us, for instance, somebody like William Shakespeare?
About a pussycat.
Are you saying that you knew
him personally? About a pussycat.
You did know him personally?
Oh, but that little beard, but that cute hair.
And
oh, but he
was
good and smart.
Yes,
was he smart?
It was reputed, and I guess you're agreeing, that he was the greatest writer
of all time. Hold up.
What do you mean, sir? You just said he was brilliant.
Oh, boy.
And I said he was the greatest writer of all
time. A cute man. And a pussycat.
Yes, but not a great writer.
Not a good writer at all.
He was not a great writer.
Shakespeare was not a good writer, no.
Well, how did you say that? Well, he wrote 37 of the greatest works.
Did you ever see the original, the first folios?
You mean they were edited by somebody?
Never mind editing. Did you see the folios?
No, I never saw them. Did you see them?
I saw the folios. You want to see what they were? Like blots. But an L that looked like a T, but an M you didn't know was an N. An O could be a P. Every letter was cockeyed and gray. Don't tell me it was a good writer. He had the worst penmanship I ever saw in my life.
Oh, I see. But he did, as it was reputed, he did write 37 of the greatest plays of all.
38.
I only know of 37. Would you care to look at this list, sir?
That is the list that has come down through the ages.
Those are the 37. Are there any that should be there?
Yes.
What's that?
Queen Alexandra and Murray. that, huh?
No, I never did. Was there any... Is there any copy of this in existence?
This is a play that I put invested money in.
Well, it probably was the only one that didn't come to light.
Come to light, it closed in Egypt.
Morton, Carl Reiner, and Mel Brooks. Whatever historians say, it's much more fun to imagine history for oneself. And it must have been in this spirit that Edmund Clerihue Bentley invented the Clerihue, that four-line verse in Halting Meter, which is an ideal medium for conjectural biography. Let's hear his lines on a famous English king.
Edward the Confessor slept under the dresser. When that began to fall, he slept in the hall.
Another on a Hanoverian monarch.
George the Third ought never to have occurred. One could only wonder at so grotesque a blunder.
Yes, one needn't be too reverential about history. Mind you, some historical events should be celebrated with due pomp. A report from the Financial Times.
A barrage of 1,066 arrows to be fired at Hastings on October 15th to commemorate the 900th anniversary of the battle will climax the opening of winter soup advertising by H.J. Hines.
Why shouldn't there be commercial sponsorship for history? There is for everything else. I'm sure people in the past had very similar attitudes to the day-to-day business of life as we do now. So let's go over to ancient Rome and the annual sales conference of General Chariot Company.
Now, fellas, the chariot business has really undergone some major changes. Our major problem, the motivational and research boys tell us, is that we keep coming out with the same chariot year after year. Now, the chariot, as you know, is no longer a means of transportation. It's become a status symbol. So they don't want the same chariot year after year. We got to make it a little different. So after all, fellas, we got to modernize our thinking. Now, this is 421 B.C. But we're going to have to look ahead to 420. Now, Flav here has suggested maybe one year we stick some fins on it. The next year we'll stick some holes in the side, 3-4 holes. Then, Arminius, you have a question there? Will the holes in the side have any practical value? Yeah, they're going to keep us in business, Arminius, is what they're going to do. All right, now, the ad campaign is out for next year, and it really looks exciting, I don't mind telling you. As you know, we're going to be stressing the power reins this year, and that should get it. Quite a few new customers. Now, as you know, the Roman Safety Council has come out against the number of stomach injuries in the past year, so we're adding a new padded dashboard, and that should be quite popular. Now, the advertising people have come up with an idea which I think is really great. For every gladiator who kills a lion, we're going to give him a new general chariot. And, of course, we'll get a lot of... you have another question there, Arminius? Well, what would a lion do with a chariot, or many? Yes, I see another suggestion over here. How about adding safety belts? Well, what good are safety belts? They keep the toga from blowing up over your eyes. That's a very good idea. Now, a lot of the dealers have been complaining about the little chariot the Huns have come out with. And so we're adding a compact chariot. We're going to stick the horses in the back on this one. Not only will it give us better traction, but it also gives the driver a nicer view. Sure, gentlemen, I think we can look forward to a very... Yes, I... Oh, you'd like to leave. You have an appointment? Well, yes, go ahead. I'm just about to terminate the meeting. Now, I think we can look... You'd like to borrow what? What, the knife? Oh, there you are. I think we can... You're welcome, Brutus. I think we can look forward to another successful year for General Chariot, and I'm certainly looking forward to it, and this meeting is now dismissed. Thank you very much.
Bob Newhart. Well, at the end of our history lesson, we just conclude with a thought from Samuel Butler.
God cannot alter the past. That is why he is obliged to connive at the existence of historians.
Goodbye.
Can somebody famous say that?
Yes, I just said it.
Oh.
Frank Muir Goes Into History was written by Frank Muir and Simon Bress and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.